Pseudopod episode 140, May 1st, 2009. This week's story, The Man Who Sank. Hello, and welcome to Pseudopod, the weekly horror podcast. I'm Alistair, your host, and this week's story comes to us from Colin P. Davies. Colin's work has appeared in Best New Science Fiction, Asimov's, and Paradox, amongst others, whilst this story first saw print on sciencefictionfantasyhorror.com. Your narrator this week isn't so much he who walks behind the rose as he who stumbles across the dandelion. So, that odd feeling in the pit of your stomach, that sinking sensation, it's real. I have a story for you, and I promise you, it's true. The Man Who Sank by Colin P. Davies. Niall is the worst of us. He's meaner, more vicious, more crazy. He hates everyone, Jamaicans, Asians, queers. Chances are he hates me as well. His dad had been a violent waste of DNA, and Niall, it seems, intends to make us all pay. He don't care about anything. And yet, only last Saturday when we met up as usual, I found him anxious and attentive to every stranger on the street. For half an hour, we'd been hanging around the laundrette, hoping to spy at least one of the Jones twins in their short skirts and ankle boots. Rain came down, fine and bright, in the orange warmth of the street lamps, and I felt colder than natural for an August evening. Jimmy sat on the bus stop bench, drinking. The canopy sheltered him from all but the strongest gusts. Somehow, he got hold of a bottle of Woodpecker. Niall tried to light a cigarette in the open doorway of the laundrette. He mumbled, "Shit. Shit," as he battled with the wind. Then he turned suddenly and gazed up the street. "What's your problem?" I said. He cupped his hand around the lighter. "The wind." "No, no, it's not that. You seem edgy. Are you expecting someone?" "Maybe. I don't know." He tried again to light the cigarette. "Shit!" "Give it up," I said. "Oh, come inside." "Andy, don't be an arse." I smirked. I could see my face reflected in the window, bright against the blackness of the bus depot wall across the street. The manager enforced a strictly no-smoking rule here. She'd banned us once before, thanks entirely to Niall's mouth, and I knew he would not risk it happening again. In Selby, at night, so warm, dry places tend to be hard to come by. Eyes watched me through the glass. Outside on the pavement sat a skinny ginger cat. I do not like cats. There is something unmasculine about a cat. You can train a dog to attack. At the very least, you can train a dog to bark, yet cats clearly believe they are superior. A cat can look up at you and down its nose at the same time. Niall had the cigarette lit. He dragged on it like a drowning man on a lifeline. "Jeez, Andy, I've got to have food." I didn't doubt him. He always looks hungry. Niall has the drawn, fatless face of a prisoner of war. "How much cash have you got?" "I'm broke." I'm sure he knew I was lying. He laughed. He launched rings of smoke into the wet wind. "What's this?" He'd spotted the cat, and the cat had spotted him. "Damn thing looks hungrier than me. Looks smarter too." Niall ignored my jibe and stooped in front of the cat. They stared at each other. Niall held out his hand. "Here, cat. Maybe I've got some food." Cautiously, the cat approached. As it neared, Niall put the cigarette to his mouth, leaned forward, and blew smoke directly into its face. The cat ran, and Niall laughed. "It's like I keep saying, never trust anyone." Jimmy came over. "Why'd you do that?" He waved the cider bottle in Niall's face, and Niall snatched it and swigged the last. "Never trust anyone." He tossed the plastic bottle away. It rolled under the bus stop bench. "Let's move," I said. "Nothing's happening here." "Where to?" asked Jimmy. Niall screwed up his cigarette packet and threw it down with the bottle. "I need more smokes. Let's go to the Odeon." Niall would bum cigarettes amongst the filmgoers. He strolled off down the street. Jimmy retrieved the bottle and followed Niall, slyly slipping the bottle into a bin out of the hard man's view. I moved out of the doorway and stood in the street. I liked the feel of the rain in my face. It was cleaner than I deserved. It challenged the staleness of my ambition. Why did I hang around with a loser like Niall? I zipped up my leather jacket and watched their retreating backs. Shuffling noise made me turn. At the opposite end of the street, just at this side of the all-night service station, someone stood in the shadows. I thought of Niall's edginess, then laughed. Someone else on the street, so what? I turned to follow the others, but Niall had stopped walking. Something was wrong. He threw his shoulders about, twisting, tugging, as though trying to lift his feet. I can't move, he said. I can't move! Jimmy began to laugh. I'm not joking! Niall yelled. I walked up to join them. I refused to run, only to have Niall make a fool of me, as he had done in the past. And then he broke free. He stumbled forward. I thought I was sinking, like in mud. He examined his shoes. I just don't get it. The path's concrete, I said. He looked at me as though he could kill, then glanced up and down the street. I checked around for company. No one lurked, either suspiciously or innocently. Everything seemed normal. I began to rationalise. It was a muscle spasm, an involuntary movement, or lack of movement, whatever. Not my problem. An hour later, we'd wandered down to the car park at the back of the coal shaft, a schizo pub which segued neatly from grey 50s drinking at the front into 80s plastic Tudor tavern nightmare at the rear. The rain had retreated into a starless sky, and a cool breeze carried the scent of fried chicken. A muted radio sang in the pub kitchen. Jimmy scanned the beer garden tables, but thanks to the rain, he would find no drinks to sweep, only abandoned ring marks in the wood. Niall showed interest in a flash red Peugeot soft top. He planned, he said, to educate me in the art of joyriding. It was a nice car, no denying it, but still I felt reluctant to get drawn in. My mother already disapproved of my friendship with Niall, and I would give her no more ammunition. Besides, my dad would kill me. It was Jimmy who spotted the stranger first. I read his wide eyes and turned. Between the tall, stone gateposts at the entrance to the car park, a man had appeared. He was small. He was bearded. He wore a limp grey suit with an open neck shirt and scuffed brown shoes, and on his head, he balanced a bright tartan cap. Niall came up behind me. I was right. I knew I was being followed. I heard the flick of his knife opening. Will you put that away? I told him. Do not be an idiot all your life. Just chill out. Don't you ever call me an idiot. Niall punched me on the shoulder. I rubbed my arm, although it was, I have to say, more out of habit than discomfort. One day, possibly soon, I would hit him back. Look, he's probably just a tramp after a handout, I said. Why would a tramp be following me? His words sounded calm, but he held up his knife hand and I saw the skin stretch tight and white across his knuckles. If I hadn't known him, I would have said he was scared. Who then? Niall pressed the knife to his own temple. I don't think he even noticed. A bead of blood squeezed onto the blade. Maybe he knows you, said Jimmy. Niall nodded. Oh, he knows me. Niall's bullshitting, I said. I laughed uneasily. It's what he does best. A car drove past the entrance, and just for an instant, I thought I could see the headlamps through the man's eclipsing silhouette. I rubbed my eyes. The night had turned colder. Andy, ask him what he wants, said Jimmy. You ask, I said. Ah, you pair of girls. Niall slashed the air with his knife. I could tell he intended to use the weapon. You see, I understood Niall's way of thinking. He'd let himself be intimidated, and even if it was just for a moment, that meant revenge. Let's cut him, he said, and marched forward. I followed him. I always followed him. I found him difficult. I often found him cruel, but he had guts. No one could deny that. Besides, the strange man must be a fool. He deserved whatever he got for messing with us. Carefully, the man folded and pocketed his cap. Then ran. Niall charged after him, and I followed along as if tugged on an invisible string. Jimmy yelled, but didn't leave the car park. He never had the guts for trouble. The man sprinted across the road, skipping puddles, and turned down past the health centre, but Niall had youth and anger, and he would not let the man escape. We trailed our quarry down a dark alley beyond the bus depot, where our footsteps reverberated like slaps on a steel drum, then out, across another street, and onto the waste ground which surrounded the derelict coal board offices. It had all happened far, far too quickly. We needed a moment to think, to grasp the meaning of these sudden events, but I could hardly grasp my breath. Ahead of me, Niall charged on. Niall! Wait! But I knew he wasn't going to stop. Not for me. Looking back, it seemed he couldn't even stop for himself. We approached the dilapidated Victorian building. Formerly, a merchant's extravagant celebration of hard-won wealth, the Grand House had served as the local coal industry office for decades. Now, it boasted boarded doors and gaping windows and an interior as gutted as the lives of the pit widows. The man disappeared through a window opening. Niall slowed down. He had his enemy trapped. I caught his arm, but he shook me off. "Wait," I said. I saw his face then, swollen-eyed, white. Fury and fear. Yes, fear. "What the hell is wrong with you?" "I'm going to cut him out of my head." He took his breath in gulps. "He hasn't done anything to you. What the hell's your problem?" "Exorcism." He got his feet onto the windowsill. "What?" "He's my dad."
"But your dad is dead. You told me."
He vanished from his locked bedroom. Locked from the inside. Niall fixed me with eyes as insane as his answer.
Niall, he's just a tramp. That's all."
Niall struggled for breath.
"I won't let you do it," I said. They'll put you away. Get lost, Andy, for your own sake."
He went through the window. To hell with Niall. I'd done all I could. The puppet string had finally snapped. I could run. I could leave him to his craziness. I'd spent too long being the restraining grip on his knife and he'd end up inside and I had enough. He didn't have a chance. And the tramp didn't have a chance either. I vaulted over the sill and into the darkness. We all knew the story of his dad and Niall had told it often enough. Apart from this new question over the exact degree of his deadness. He'd been retired early on the grounds of mental health after an incident in the lowest shaft of the mine. Something odd had happened down there, and his dad had the burns to prove it. Yet, the company had resisted all attempts to investigate. It had been inevitable, therefore, that his dad's story would find very eager ears. He told of how the rock floor had grown soft, how his feet had sunk. He'd only just managed to grab an overhead cable when the ground opened up and he'd looked down into another world, a fiery world existing within, or beneath, or alongside this one. He claimed to have seen a burning river and felt the blast of fire and glimpsed creatures as tall as men and as angular as stick insects. He'd become terrified that one day that world would return to take him. The company had said he was sick. Niall had hated him too much to care either way. Now, I could hear Niall's voice coming from above me. I waited a moment, suffocating in the stench of tomcats. Then I made my way up the staircase and went up, my feet scouting each step for weakness. I could hear Niall shouting, "I always knew you'd be back!" As I ran along the bare boards of the landing, light from a glassless window threw my shadow onto the wall. I could hear Niall. One floor up, still one more flight to go. His voice trembled. "I used to think I could hear you, slithering beneath the floor of my room." I took the final flight in five leaps and discovered Niall blocking the open doorway to a room. I moved closer, but I didn't touch him. I didn't trust him. "He won't talk to me." The room took his words and tossed them from wall to hard wall. I glanced past Niall into a room, vast and empty, apart from the dark shape of the man who moved near one of the immense, frameless windows. He's probably terrified. Niall kept his gaze into the room. How can two different worlds be in the same place? They didn't teach that in school. Would you expect them to? I've thought about it a lot. I've heard scientists say similar things. I shook my head. Forget the crazy stories, Niall. You're not a kid anymore. He believed it. I know he did. Then he vanished, and now he's here. Your dad was a monster. He was not a magician. I'd never met his dad, and Niall had moved to our street with his mum only last year, but I knew he'd been an intimidating bully. Whatever happened to him, I hope he got what he deserved. After he'd gone, I always felt he was close. He put the idea in my head, you see, and it sank very, very deep. I could scare myself at the slightest sound. I still do. Every night is a nightmare.
You can't believe this is him, Niall. He's just a tramp. You shouldn't let your dad get to you anymore.
Niall finally looked at me. I have to make it stop. I have to kill him. I'd never seen Niall so distressed. He appeared about to cry.
It's not fair.
he yelled. I shouldn't have to still be scared. He held up the knife and abruptly charged at the man. I threw myself forward, catching Niall's leg. He came down with a crash and a curse. I got to my knees. The tramp backed up against the lower sill of the window opening. I felt burning in my right bicep. My jacket gaped, slashed. Niall had cut me. I put my hand to the pain and there was warmth. You bastard. Get away from me! Niall scrambled up, but I had his arm and grappled with him. I pulled myself up and grabbed his knife hand. He tried to push the blade into my thigh, but I held him back. We stumbled towards the tramp, who dodged to avoid us, and, as I watched, rolled slowly backwards across the sill. I pushed Niall to the floor. The man fell from the window, and as he fell, he made no sound. We've killed him! I flung myself under the sill to look down the outside of the building. Behind me, Niall sobbed. I've killed him. I've killed him. He said it maybe 10 times before he stopped for breath. I turned my back to the window and watched Niall's sunken body rise and fall with the rhythm of his breathing. Eventually, he looked up at me. His lips hardly moved as he spoke. My dad always wore a tartan cap. I don't want to see Niall again. I can't forgive him for that fight. The wound on my arm is a reminder that nothing and nobody in this badly defined world can be trusted, least of all your own senses. I also don't want to see him because he's not the Niall I used to know. He's lost his edge, the don't give a damn I admired. He's turned inwards. He doubts his memory and he does not want to know mine. I phoned him midweek and asked how he was doing, and all he said in a flat, dull voice was sinking. And I also don't want to see him because of what I know, what I haven't told him, what I've shielded him from that night, because if he knew, it would break him apart. When I'd looked down from that window, I'd expected to see the tramp hit in hard stone. Instead, I saw the ground open below him. I saw a distant flaming river wandering across a scorched red plain. The tramp twisted lightly in the air, then transformed with a shrug into an attenuated twig that floated down through the rising heat. The muddy path closed above it, leaving only an acrid breath of hot air in my face, and a silence all the louder for Niall's sobbing. The fear is inside me now. I hear the slithering sounds at night. I lie sweating in my bed. Yet in my dreams it is not Niall's dad who rises up from the ground, but Niall. He tells me not to worry about the world below. The world within. The world within us all. But I do worry. I worry about sinking into Niall's world of fear, his world of hate. The ground no longer feels solid beneath my feet.
Hell is what you make it. Whether it's the long chains of financial paraphernalia draped around Jacob Marley in A Christmas Carol, or endless years staring at the same events over and over again, your memory tricking you every time that this time you can say the right thing, this time you can keep your mouth shut, this time the road not travelled but somehow still visible can be reached. But it's wrong to say hell is regret, is guilt. Hell is something much simpler, much more elemental, more universal. Hell is choice. I've met hundreds of people in my life, and not a single one of them was intact. We are all broken, all carrying our faults on our backs and in our hearts, all of us consumed by the sneaking suspicion that we are terrible disappointments, that the people who say they like us are only saying that, that we are tolerated at best, mocked at worst. We are all wrong. We are all extraordinary. There are a billion different small acts of kindness and heroism carried out every single day. Letting someone else through a door first, carrying someone else's bags, putting your daily crap to one side to listen to your partner's. The quiet, small heroism of humanity is something which is always overlooked in favour of its failures, its cruelties. Or, to put it another way, we choose hell every time, because we think we deserve it. The truth is, as Shakespeare wrote, and no less a luminary than Captain Picard himself, once used in our defence. What a piece of work is a man. How noble in reason. How infinite in faculties, in form and moving. How express and admirable in action. How like an angel in apprehension. How like a god. The beauty of the world. The paragon of animals. Well knew his stuff, trust me. I've studied it. Of course, if you want something more recent, then perhaps Renton sums it up best in Trainspotting, with Choose Life. And if that still isn't good enough for you, then remember this. You are better than you think you are, by a very, very long way. So give yourself a break. You deserve it. Pseudopod relies on you to pay our authors, cover our server costs, and keep our ninja turns in Rice Krispie Cakes. And trust me, a Rice Krispie Cake-less ninja turn is not something you want to see. So if you liked this story, or the idea of a ninja trying to eat a Rice Krispie Cake quietly amuses you, then please go to pseudopod.org and click on Feed the Pod. I promise you will not regret it. Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. Only a jumble of streets and a few big bumps in the ground. Only a whisper of God. But sometimes they glimmer, Pseudopod's people here. Sometimes they shine.